Small businesses. Direct Line guarantee to be any public liability insurance quote for the same cover. Can your insurance do that? New customers only. Qualifying criteria apply. Underwritten by UK Insurance Limited.
Wednesday, September 23rd, 2015. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday, and we bring you just a little bit different of an outlook on the world of sports than you are going to get anywhere else. I know, there are a ton of sports shows out there, but if you want to be a little more informed, then you need to download the Daily Dose. We will inform, we will entertain every single week. First off, if you would like to contact me, a couple different ways you can do that. You can find me on Twitter. Twitter handle is at Daily Dose Sports. That is D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. You can use the same name for Facebook if you want to spice up that Facebook feed a little bit. If you want to head over to our website, go over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com. Number of new articles that go up every week. A few different things, a few different thoughts that I might have. There might be a top five college football. There might be a top five pro football coming out here soon. You might want to check that out. I actually have our first top five power rankings for the NFL coming out on Friday. You want to check that out. If you would like to email the show, we do get a number of emails to the show here. Give us an email, dailydosesports@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you. We have a ton to get to today. There are a lot of things going on in the world of sports. This week on the Daily Dose, we are going to break down the NFL. You know, some teams, they kind of are who we thought they were going to be, but others have some realities that they're going to have to face. We're going to talk about a few of those. How are the wild card races shaping up in Major League Baseball? A couple of things to look at there. And we're going to be looking at the winners and losers in college football like we do every single week. Trust me, it might not be who you think it is. Plus, as usual, a very popular segment. We have our Daily Dose Top 5. You want to stick around for that one today. A few things coming out in the world of sports news today. Biggest news might be that Yankees legend and Hall of Famer Yogi Berra passed away at the age of 90. You know, I think we may do a disservice to Yogi Berra, because I know from our generation, and Berra played, you know, back in kind of that old golden era of baseball. But when you think of Yogi Berra, what do you think of? You think of, you know, his funny quotes, and he was a very entertaining guy. He was a very funny guy. He had the quotes, you know, it's not over till it's over, and if you come to a fork in the road, take it, and all the. But I don't know if you realize how good of a player he was. I mean, for 19 seasons, 18 of them, you know, with the Yankees, he was a nasty hitter. Hit better than 300 three times. Drove in more than 100 runs five different times. Finished his career as a catcher with 358 home runs. If he was doing that in today's era, he would be talked about like you know, he was a god or something. We kind of forget about that because of you know, his quotes and because of the funny guy that he was. You kind of forget how good of a player he was. Baseball lost a good one in Yogi Berra. He was 90 when he passed away. It looks like safety Cam Chancellor, Seattle Seahawks safety, has decided he is actually going to show up and play. Yes, he has a contract. And he still has 3 years left on his contract, but he decided he was going to hold out because he wanted some more guaranteed money. Looks like the Seahawks were not going to budge. So Cam Chancellor has stated, I'm going to go help my teammates that are understanding of my positions and the ones who aren't. God forgives all. Why can't I? What are you forgiving anyone for? What do you have to forgive anyone for? You're the one who agreed to something and held out. If anything, your teammates, your owner, and your fans should be angry at you, not the other way around. Cam Chancellor is very, very good at what he does. You do kind of wonder if that's going to get in the way of kind of locker room chemistry. You held out for nothing. Your team is sitting at 0-2, and they have a few problems. We're going to be talking a little bit more about the Seattle Seahawks coming up. It was announced that Cleveland Browns quarterback Josh McCown is going to start on Sunday against the Oakland Raiders. Bumps Johnny Manziel back out of the starting lineup, and also gets no one to watch that game come Sunday between the Browns and the Raiders. Manziel was really the only redeeming factor that the game had in it. Now, no one's going to watch it. Did you see that the Dallas Cowboys, obviously, you know, they lost their quarterback Tony Romo to a broken collarbone this past week against the Philadelphia Eagles. And then owner Jerry Jones came out and kind of told everyone, hey, we're totally, totally fine with backup Brandon Weeden. We know he's really, really good. He's going to be great. In fact, he's going to be really good. We don't have to worry about it. He's going to step in. And then last night, the Dallas Cowboys traded their fifth round pick in 2017 to the Buffalo Bills for the Bills' seventh round pick and Matt Cassel. Yeah, you've got a lot of faith in Brandon Weeden. You've got so much faith in Weeden, we better get Matt Cassel. Who wants to tell them that Matt Cassel's probably worse than Brandon Weeden? Because he's horrible. He's horrible. Did you see the story coming out of Minnesota where they have their mascot? It's this guy who dresses up like a Viking and he puts on a Viking helmet and he has a big, fake beard or whatever and long hair. And then he like rides a Harley out onto the field. Well, he was getting $1,500 a game to be the Vikings mascot. He decided that wasn't enough. And so he told the Vikings he wants $20,000 a game. And the Vikings basically said, okay, then don't come back. So now he doesn't have a job at all. Now he lost the gig as the Vikings mascot, Ragnar. Here's the problem for Ragnar. And Ragnar might not realize this. First off, you're not a real Viking. It's not like you, no, I have something of value. No, you don't. You don't have any value. You're just a guy that puts on like a fake beard and a Viking helmet. I mean, I can put a Bronco head on my head. It doesn't mean I'm a horse. But Ragnar decided that he had some apparent value and demanded $20,000 a game. Here's the other thing. It's not that hard to find a big white guy up in Minnesota. There are a ton of large white guys in Minnesota. Strap a beard on them. Here's your fake Viking helmet. And look, we got a whole new mascot. And it's just like the other one. Ragnar's not real bright. Ragnar's still dealing with apparently an ancient brain because really 20,000 from 1500, not from 1500 to 2000, from 1500 to 20,000. One other story coming out in the world of the NFL, researchers at Boston University apparently studied 91 former NFL players to see if they had, that brain disease, the CTE, from all the collisions and all the concussions. They studied 91 former NFL players. Can you guess how many of them showed signs of CTE? Like 20 or like 25? How about 87 of them showed signs of CTE? I've told you this in the past. The NFL is living big, it's not like it's just going to crumble in one day. But there are a lot of things that are in the future for the NFL that they're going to have to deal with, and some of them are really, really scary. NFL is going to have to do something about this. NFL is going to have to step in, and I know they're trying to make things safer. I know that's what they say, but it's not always the case. If you really wanted to make things safer, you'd probably get rid of, all the steroids that are in the league. We got to jump in because we have a ton of things to get to. I want to talk about the NFL first off, because when you look at the first 2 weeks, and last week we kind of talked about all the overreactions that we saw in that first week, because first games are played and you're like, oh, we're so excited to jump in, and we start just overreacting to everything. Now, in week two, we start to see a little bit more trends. We start to see, okay, this team consistently has showed this. This team in another week looked the same. Now, I want to talk a few different items, a few different teams. They kind of fall into a couple of different categories. There's a few different groups that some of these NFL teams fall into. The first group I want to talk about is the group that is crashing back to earth. There are a couple of teams this past week that crashed back to earth. And the first team I want to talk about, of course, is the Buffalo Bills. Because after trouncing the Indianapolis Colts in week one, many people were starting to send the Bills to the Super Bowl. Hey, we knew they had a great defense, and now they have Rex Ryan, and they have the perfect quarterback for their system. So this past week, they face the New England Patriots at home, and they were going to probably beat the Patriots. It was just by a matter of how much, except that they gave up over 500 yards and lost 40-32. And I'm going to be honest. I think what kills or what killed the Bills on Sunday was the arrogance of Rex Ryan. Because, you know, in football, if your defense can manufacture pressure with just four people, you can be really, really dominating. I mean, that means you can drop back seven guys into coverage. You're double teaming the players that you want to double team. If you can manufacture pressure with just your front four, those are the great defenses. And so Rex Ryan basically said, well, we can do that. We can totally just get pressure with just our front four. So he decided they were going to just go with their four. And sometimes they only even rush three. And you saw Tom Brady absolutely pick them apart. And they kind of let him get going. They kind of let him get warmed up. And then they start, I guess we'll blitz here and there. And then when they did, he just got rid of the ball so quickly that they couldn't get to him. I guess at least we didn't have to see, you know, Rex Ryan stick his foot in his mouth or anything stupid if they would have beat the Patriots. But, of course, I would assume Rex Ryan probably wants to put somebody else's foot in his mouth. I don't know. But I think they kind of came crashing back to earth. Your defense is very, very good, but it's not a team that you just line up and just smash everybody right off the line. And you sure couldn't do it against probably the best team in the NFL, at least right now. Bills had to come crashing back to earth. Second team I want to talk about that came crashing back to earth in week two, Kansas City Chiefs. You know, the Chiefs outgained the Denver Broncos on Thursday night in yardage, but they lost because they kept turning the ball over. They had five turnovers in that game. Now, I know Chiefs fans were pretty excited about, you know, beating up on the Texans in week one. And they had to be feeling pretty good when they were up 14 just before halftime, late in the second quarter. And then, I don't know, like Peyton Manning got some like old man Clint Eastwood kind of get off my lawn strength going. And he kind of went back to his old offense in the shotgun, in the hurry up, where he can see a little bit better, where he can step into his throws a little bit more. And he, you know, leads the Broncos to three touchdowns. And then, you know, we had Alex Smith throwing the bad interception before halftime. Jamal Charles went all Jamal Charles on us. Jamal Charles, jeez. Jason Pierre-Paul thinks Jamal Charles has bad hands. Do you realize this? Because everybody was like, oh, yeah, you know, we gave it to Charles, and he's the guy you want with the ball. Is he? Do you realize in eight seasons, Jamal Charles has 26 fumbles? I mean, he fumbled at Texas when he was in college. He's probably fumbling with his iPod right now, trying to turn off the Daily Dose because he doesn't like what I'm saying. He doesn't have the best hands. I realize Niles Davis wasn't getting the yardage that Charles was, but he might be the guy I trust more in that situation. Chiefs came back to earth a little bit in week two. That had to be crushing to lose the way that they did. And they've got a tough schedule upcoming. We'll talk about a little bit more about that in just a little bit. The Tennessee Titans. It turns out that Marcus Mariota isn't quite Dan Marino / Joe Montana / Johnny Unitas / Brett Favre / John Elway / whoever you want to put in there. And he didn't even have to play a very good team to show it. I mean, against the Browns, Mariota was sacked seven times and fumbled three times. He lost to Johnny Manziel. I still like Marcus Mariota a lot. I do. They have a really soft schedule, which should help them. But I'm telling you right now, and I told you last week, Marcus Mariota is going to struggle a little bit. It's going to be a little bit tough. Another team that came crashing back to earth in week two, the St. Louis Rams. You know, after they upset the Seahawks, you were starting to see some of the sports media just scrambling to jump on that bandwagon. It turns out that Seattle is kind of struggling, and the Rams offense kind of is what we thought it was. They laid an egg on Sunday. They got blown out by Kirk Cousins and the Washington Redskins. They gave up nearly 400 yards to Kirk Cousins and the Redskins. And they only manufactured 213 total yards themselves. It's a typical Jeff Fisher team. They're going to be very, very good on defense. If they can get a running game, they'll be okay. And if not, they're going to struggle on offense because that's just how they are. And they don't have a quarterback. I mean, Nick Foles, at the end of the day, turns out, Nick Foles. San Francisco. The San Francisco 49ers came back to earth a little bit in week two. Niners fans were so excited after they beat a Minnesota Vikings team that had kind of, I don't know, like the Niners had built this Vikings team up to be like the 70s Steelers because they were like, we beat the Vikings! Yeah? I guess. I didn't realize that was the target. I didn't realize that was like the measuring line. Well, we beat the Vikings. Because it turns out that the 49ers defense is pretty average, aside from Navarro Bowman. And it turns out that Colin Kaepernick is still pretty awful. Kind of like we remembered. I mean, the Steelers this past week hung 43 on the Niners. Their offensive line isn't very good. Running back Carlos Hyde, he got a concussion, and he did pass the concussion test, so it looks like he can get back in, but he's probably got another concussion coming because the offensive line is not very good. So the 49ers kind of came back to earth this week after their big week one victory. And the last team I'm going to put on this list, and when I say it, you're going to be like, oh, why did they come crashing back to earth? They're 2-0. Why are they on this list? They're 2-0. And not only are they 2-0, they're 2-0 in their division. But now that Tony Romo is out and Dez Bryant is out, the Dallas Cowboys are kind of crashing back to earth. And they might not feel it yet. Like, you're hearing confidence right now because that's what football players say and that's what football guys do. And you're hearing, well, we're just going to rally around Brandon Whedon. We're just going to get it done. Until they get into a game with some real teams and the other team is knocking Brandon Whedon around and he's throwing it to the wrong uniform a few times. And for all the talk that we've heard about the Dallas Cowboys offensive line, they aren't running the ball very well. They had 80 yards against the Giants. They had 109 yards against the Eagles. Now that might not sound horrible. That might not sound terrible. They're averaging about 95 yards a game right now. Do you realize last year they were averaging about 148 per game last year? And now you have Brandon Whedon at the helm. You had better start running the football real, real quick. Because if you don't, you're going to get your quarterback. You're going to end up with Matt Cassel at quarterback. I know that Cowboys head coach Jason Garrett is an Ivy League guy, went to Columbia or whatever. You better start showing that you're a smart guy. Because if you keep throwing the ball now, not going to go well for the Cowboys. Let's talk about a couple of teams in the NFL that maybe aren't quite as bad as we thought they were. There are a few teams in the league that we looked at them last week. They don't look very good. They might struggle all year. They might be terrible because they had a really, really bad opening week. There's a couple teams out here that aren't quite as bad as they thought. First off, the team we just talked about, the Minnesota Vikings. You know, in game one versus the 49ers, Adrian Peterson had 10 carries for 31 yards. And total, the Vikings had 248 yards total as a team. In game two against the Lions, Adrian Peterson had 29 carries. He had 134 yards. And somehow, the total offense jumped up to 350 yards. Remember last week, I said, when you have a great running back like that, you've got to feed them 20 carries. You have to. You can't get out of your mindset and out of your offensive game plan so quickly. Give them the ball because the more they carry, the better they get. And it turns out that's actually what happened. When they gave it to him, suddenly quarterback Teddy Bridgewater, he has more time to pass. He can run some play action stuff. He can get out and run and do some. Wow. It's amazing how that works, isn't it? Maybe the Vikings need to hire me. Maybe the Vikings should hire me to be Ragnar. I don't know. The Cleveland Browns. After getting crushed by the Jets in week one, the Browns beat the Titans, and Johnny Manziel didn't look completely terrible. He was 8 of 15 for 172 yards. He had two touchdowns. He didn't throw it much. I mean, he threw it 15 times. It was Tebow-ish. Can I just tell you this, and I talked a few minutes ago, they're going to start McCown over Manziel this week. Can I tell you why? Because Johnny Manziel hates zone defenses. And that's not just Johnny Manziel. That's young quarterbacks in general. They hate playing against the zone. And the Titans in this game last week, they did run a lot of 4-3. They ran some cover two kind of stuff. But see, here's the thing about young quarterbacks and zones. In college, most teams they don't have the time. They don't have the ability to install these complex zone systems. And so in college, you take the snap as a quarterback. You make your first read and you say, here's my first read. And it might be in a level. It might be you go deep to shallow, or it might be I look short and then I start going longer. Just depends on the system. But you take a look at your first read. Is he open? If he's open, I throw it to him. Not open, I look to my second read. Open, not, Okay. If the second read doesn't open up, take off running. That's basically what they do in college. Well, here's the problem. In the NFL, you look at your first read and you say, are they open? It's not just man-to-man where I say the receiver has a step on him, the receiver has kind of position on him. I have to also look, is he running into a zone? Because not only are they playing maybe a one-deep zone or a two-deep zone, they might be playing a three or a four-deep zone. I can't tell if he's open or not, to be honest. And so what Johnny Manziel does, and he's not unlike most of these young quarterbacks, goes back to pass, looks at his first read, says, I'm not sure if he's open. I'm just going to start running around and see if I can make something happen and hope something breaks down. Hope we have a breakdown in the defensive backfield, and then I'll know for sure if they're open, just like you saw this last week. You got a breakdown, the receiver got deep, and then I can just chuck it. He can get away with doing some things like that. But it's because some of these complex zones, they're just confusing to these young quarterbacks. It takes them a while. You get a Tom Brady, you get a Peyton Manning, they look out there and they say, okay, you're in a three deep, and you start seeing Peyton pointing, you start seeing Brady calling this play and that play, and then they say, okay, as soon as this ball gets in my hand, I'm going right here, and I want my receiver to settle into this hole in the zone. Just stop right there. Don't keep running. Just stop settling, and I'm going to throw it right there as soon as I get the snap. But it takes a long time. These young quarterbacks, they don't have that experience. They can't do that. The Cleveland Browns, their defense, I think, was the biggest thing that stepped up for them this week. It helps that they were playing, a young Tennessee Titans team. But the Browns, maybe they're not quite as bad as we thought they originally were. And I'm going to throw one other team in here. I'm going to throw the New York Jets in here, a team that is not quite as bad as I thought. I still want to see more of them because I don't have that much faith in Ryan Fitzpatrick. And I know they played on Monday night against the Colts. They beat the Colts. The Colts, by the way, looked terrible. But I didn't think Ryan Fitzpatrick looked very good. And the Jets are 2-0. They're winning with their defense. They have only allowed 17 points total. But they've played the Browns and the Colts, who are both, the Browns really struggled in week one. The Colts seem to be struggling just entirely. I want to see the Jets go against a team. And I want to see when the pressure's on Fitzpatrick because he still seems to be that guy that he's probably better than Geno Smith for the Jets. I just don't know that he's still very good. And I want to see a little bit more. But the Jets are not as bad as I thought they would. I will say that. I want to talk about a few teams in the NFL they've got some harsh realities they've got to face. And some of them, you're going to have to kind of deal with what you have because you've got some problems. And you're going to have to kind of figure out a way to fix these. One of the teams I want to talk about is the Baltimore Ravens. And I'll be honest, they lost to the Raiders this past week. And no, I'm not just hammering from losers of the Raiders. But I thought the situation with Baltimore was almost more of a, we lost our leader, Terrell Suggs, and we're not quite sure what to do. They allowed the Raiders to score 37 points. And I know the Raiders are improving. They aren't the team that they have been the past two or three years, but they also aren't going to score 40 points on too many teams. The Ravens gave up 448 yards. And then, toward the end of the game, the Ravens get a turnover. They're nearly in field goal range. And defensive lineman Timmy Jernigan takes a personal foul, roughing the passer on Derek Carr. Now, if I told you beforehand, the game is going to come down. It's going to be kind of, not sure who's going to win, but one of these teams, either the Raiders or the Ravens, is going to take a bad personal foul call and it's going to cost them a chance to win the game. Who would you have taken? I mean, it was very Raider-esque, but no, it was the Raiders. Or it was the Ravens that made that kind of mistake. They're not getting a ton of help. And one of the biggest problems right now for the Ravens, they have Steve Smith at wide receiver. And then they don't have anyone else. They don't have anyone else. You're going to have a tight end. You're going to have Justin Forsett. Somebody's going to have to step up because your best receiver is closing in on 40 years old. The Ravens got some issues they're going to have to work out. And a lot of them are going to be confidence issues because they did lose Terrell Suggs. The Seattle Seahawks. Now, I told you, I expect the Seattle Seahawks to bounce back to a degree. And now we find out Cam Chancellor is coming back. That's going to help their defense a little bit. But the offensive line is not very good. Do you realize that Russell Wilson has already been sacked 8 times? and that Marshawn Lynch is averaging about 3 yards a carry. So we consider and say Cam Chancellor is going to come back and that's going to fix everything. I want you to keep one thing in mind. On Sunday night against the Packers defensive line was getting after Russell Wilson. That's not a very good Packers defense. I mean, if there is a weakness to the Packers, it is their defense. They were putting all kinds of pressure on Russell Wilson. They weren't giving Marshawn Lynch a ton of room. If you can't beat them off the line, who can you beat? I mean, at least you have Jimmy Graham. Remember in the offseason, they were like, well, we got Jimmy Graham. Yes, we traded away a very good center, Max Unger, for him. But we got Jimmy Graham. That's going to fix everything. Well, yeah, what's he got, like 7 catches total? I mean, his 7 catches aren't exactly killing anyone just yet. One other team that's got they've got some harsh realities to face, the New Orleans Saints. You know, when I picked the NFC South in our Daily Dose NFL preview, I kind of flipped a coin and said, is it the Saints or is it the Falcons? And so it like came up, you know, tails, so I took the Saints. I was thinking Drew Brees would be better this year. He's not. In fact, he might be worse. So far, Drew Brees has 2 touchdowns. He has 2 interceptions. He has 6 sacks. And the Saints lost to the Buccaneers on Sunday. The Buccaneers aren't very good, folks. And now they're saying that Drew Brees might have a shoulder injury. I guess my only question is, how could we possibly tell if he has a shoulder injury? He keeps throwing the ball to the wrong team, and he keeps throwing ill-advised passes into bad spots. Drew Brees is really struggling, and here's my concern for Drew Brees and Sean Payton. This could be the end of an era. There's only a few of those players and you know coaches left from their Super Bowl run. If the New Orleans Saints don't get things figured out soon, you're going to see them sack that entire roster, coaching staff, management. Everyone's going to go away in New Orleans. Just a tough situation. They can't seem to get things figured out. I don't know why. One other team that's got some realities they've got to face. The Detroit Lions. You know, I said in our NFL preview that quarterback Matt Stafford might get injured and Dan Orlovsky could be playing very, very soon because the Lions offensive line is bad and they don't have a running game. And I won't lie. I'll be honest. When I said that, and when I posted the NFL preview on the website, I heard from some Detroit Lions fans. And I got some hate mail on that. If you missed the preview, head on over to dailydosesports.wordpress.com. You can check out the NFL preview. But Lions fans were like, hey, what are you saying this for? Because have you seen the preseason? Amir Abdullah is the next Barry Sanders. Slow down. Lions fan, and I realized they were mad at me, or they're, I don't know, maybe they just hate where they live, I don't know, but don't blame me, because through 2 games, the next Barry Sanders has 13 carries and 59 yards. Yeah, so much for preseason, I guess that didn't matter. Also, Matt Stafford has been hit 11 times already through 2 games, and if you didn't see it, against Minnesota, he's running toward the out-of-bounds line, steps out of bounds. Minnesota hits him anyway, knocks him out, late hit, out of bounds. Here's the thing, though. None of his teammates came to his defense. Nobody came over like, hey, you don't hit our quarterback like that. They were just like, I don't know, he's running. I guess you just hit him. I don't know. Sorry about that. That doesn't bode well. That sounds like, I don't know if there's an issue in the locker room or if they have a beef with the way he plays, but why wouldn't you step up for your quarterback? That would concern me a great deal if I'm a Lions fan. Don't worry, Matt Stafford. I have some really good news for you a little bit later here in just a few minutes. Last team I'm going to talk about, and I could talk about the Indianapolis Colts real easy and the struggles that Andrew Luck is having and how he doesn't look like he is the guy that we've all thought of as Andrew Luck. But the last team I'm going to talk about is a team that has some realities to face is the Philadelphia Eagles. We have to talk about Chip Kelly a little bit. He is now 0-2, and we keep hearing that he was smarter than everyone else. It's not looking that way. We knew the defense would struggle. I mean, their defense last year wasn't great. It seemed like it was starting to come around a little bit. Here's what we didn't expect. We didn't expect that the offense would actually be worse. Through 2 games, the Philadelphia Eagles offense has 5 turnovers and just 2 touchdowns. And Sam Bradford is making Eagles fans wish they had Tim Tebow. I want you to think about this for a second. They're playing the Cowboys on Sunday, and Bradford looked so completely dysfunctional and horrible. Philly fans were begging for Mark Sanchez. Think about that for one second. That is where it has gotten for Philadelphia fans. You were cheering for Mark Sanchez to come into the game. That's amazing. Now, here is the good news for the Eagles. And I actually do have good news for you. The NFC East is horrible. It's beyond horrible. So you're 0-2, but your other competition is Washington, who is still kind of dysfunctional. The Giants, who are a complete bumbling circus right now. And the Cowboys, who just lost their two best players in Tony Romo and Dez Bryant. There's still 14 games to go. It's not like the season's over yet. Philadelphia could get right back in the thick of this. They just got to, you know, kind of put some things together and get some things figured out. But the Philadelphia Eagles, they've got some realities they got to figure out, and it's got to start. That offense has been absolutely dreadful. Chip Kelly, that's supposed to be your deal. You're supposed to be an offensive guy. How is your offense that horrible? All right. Let's take a look at a couple games to watch this week. I told you just a minute ago. Good news for Matt Stafford. Hey, the Denver Broncos are coming to town. So I do think this is a dangerous game for the Broncos. Let's be honest. The Lions are playing for their lives. If they go 0-3, especially in that division, going to be very, very tough for them to make the playoffs. I expect Ford Field to be very, very loud. That is the Sunday night game. It's going to be loud. It's going to be crazy. It's in the dome. Lions are going to have to play better. So I do think it is dangerous. But here's the bad news for Matt Stafford. In two games, the Bronco defense has hit opposing quarterbacks 16 times. And, you know, I talk about hits a lot. I don't always bring up sacks. And a lot of people get this confused when you're talking about football in general. They look at a team and they look at their stats. Well, how many sacks do you have? Sacks are completely overrated. I don't care about sacks. I don't care how many times you sack the quarterback. Unless it's just some insane amount. We had six sacks this week. Okay, great. But what I'm looking at is I want to see how many times you hit the quarterback. Because that's what makes him gun shy. If you got two sacks and you only had two hits, it's not that big of a deal. If you had two sacks, but you hit him eight times, yeah, he's going to get a little bit gun shy back there. And he's going to start throwing the ball before he's ready. He's going to start throwing some interceptions. He's going to start having some turnovers. The hits are far, far more important than the sacks. Always keep that in mind. Matt Stafford, good luck on Sunday night. I think Detroit is dangerous. I don't know if Matt Stafford's going to finish the game. Another game you should keep an eye on this weekend is the Atlanta Falcons at the Dallas Cowboys. Is Dallas going to ever start running the football? We keep hearing about this offensive line and how great they are. They're going to have this running back by committee situation. They better start running the ball, because I'm telling you right now, if you give quarterback Matt Ryan with the Falcons and Julio Jones too many opportunities, you're playing with fire. Dallas will get themselves in trouble. The Bills at the Dolphins, Buffalo Bills at Miami. I guess I just want to see who's going to finish second in the AFC East, and this might give us at least a little bit of an idea. Did you hear down at Miami that defensive lineman Ndamukong Suh is now just, he's not listening to any of the defensive coaches. Like, they say, hey, run this stunt or run this play or run this, and he just, whatever, I'll just do whatever I want. Things are going well in Miami. They just lost to Jacksonville. Nice job. And then the Monday night game, the Kansas City Chiefs go to Green Bay. The Chiefs need to keep pace with the Broncos and the Chargers, because if you keep losing, you're going to be starting to worry about what the Raiders are doing, and you don't want to be in that situation. Again, the playoffs are going to get away from you pretty quickly. To be the Chiefs right now, looking at that game against Denver, up by 14, almost halftime, all of a sudden to where they are right now they got to go to Green Bay. Chiefs season took a big, big hit in just like 30 minutes of game time. Hey, let's shift over to the world of Major League Baseball. Do you realize that there are only like 10 to 12 games left in the regular season? You take a look at the wild card standings. There are still some things that are fluid. There are still some things that could move around a little bit. But I mean, it looks like maybe in the American League, it could be Yankees versus either Astros or Rangers, whoever comes out on top in that. National League. It's looking very much like it's going to be Pirates versus Cubs for the wild card. Now, here's something I'm going to forewarn you about. And in the next few weeks, we're going to start talking a little bit more baseball as we start getting into the postseason, start looking at some of those postseason matchups, start looking at you know which teams look like they can advance through. But here's what you're going to start hearing in the next few weeks. The sports media, and I've told you in the past, I guess I'm considered a member of the sports media now. I don't know. But I'm not sports media. I'm like sports media-ish. I'm not one of those guys. Because the sports media, sometimes they'll get a story and they'll start running around with it and saying, oh, this is sports news. No, it's not. No, it isn't. And oh, here's an opinion that I think everyone should have. No, we shouldn't. Shut up. You're going to start hearing, and I've already started to hear it. I've already started to hear some big, big names in the sports media complaining about the one game wild card game. And sometimes, like I said, here at the Daily Dose, we have to kind of be the voice of reason for the sports media. Because the media is already starting to say, one game isn't fair. Yes, the fans love it or whatever, but one game's not fair because this whole long season shouldn't just come down to one game. Well, except for the fact that it doesn't come down to one game. It comes down to 163 games. The season is already so long. We don't need to make it longer. They're already saying, well, maybe we should change the wild card game to like a three-game series or a five-game series or an 11-game series. Or maybe we should just play, just keep playing. Shut up. Do you think that the Mets care if it's a one-game playoff? Do you think the Cardinals care? Or do you think the Dodgers care? No. The Kansas City Royals could care less this year, at least, if it's a one-game or not. Do you know why? Because they are going to win their division. They don't care. None of them care if it's one game or if it's three games or if it's five games. They don't care. So you're going to start hearing sports media saying, well we've got to start doing something about this. Here's the thing. The fans love the one game wild card. We love it. It feels like March Madness. Hey, one and done. You either get it done or you don't. Win your division over the 162 previous games. And then you won't have to worry about it. Like I said, we will be talking some more Major League Baseball as we get a little bit closer to the playoffs in the next few weeks. 10, 12 games left, and there's a few spots that are still completely up for grabs. When you look at some of the schedules that they have, between Pittsburgh and Chicago, you got to think Chicago obviously has the easier road. Starting on Friday, Chicago and Pittsburgh have a three-game series that you're going to want to keep an eye on. Over on the American League, starting on Friday, Houston and the Texas Rangers have a three-game series. You're going to want to keep an eye on those. They have big-time playoff implications. And then next Thursday, the Angels and the Rangers have a four-game series to finish out the season. Got some really, really interesting scenarios playing out in Major League Baseball you're going to want to keep an eye on. Let's shift over, though, because it's football season. Yes, baseball's coming. We're going to have postseason baseball. We're going to talk a lot about that in the future, but it is football season. And speaking of media nonsense, speaking of sometimes when the sports media just gets things blatantly wrong, I want to talk a little bit about college football this week. I told you last week on the Daily Dose that that Texas fired their athletic director, Steve Patterson, and I guess the reason was he had made some good hires. He was pretty good in the office, but he was just kind of a jerk to deal with. He wasn't real friendly with boosters. He wasn't real friendly with fans. He wasn't real friendly even with people in his own office, and so they fired him. Texas isn't doing great, and we know that is big business down at Texas. And so the sports media jumped on it, and again, these are not dumb guys. These are sports media guys that when I say the name, you would go, oh, really? They said this? There were sports media guys saying right off the bat, well, Mack Brown would just be a great fit for the next Texas AD. Based on what? Why on earth would Mack Brown be a good fit for that? Well, he was at Texas for a really long time, and he gets along well with everybody down there. I mean, he's great with the boosters. He's great with and he's old. I think that's a prerequisite for an AD. He has to be old. I'm sure there's some other things. Okay, first off, That's a tough job. Why would Mac Brown want that job? That's a demanding job. That's not a show up in the afternoon and play with the grandkids in the morning. And no, that's like a big time job being Texas athletic director. Second, that's a job for a businessman. I don't have any idea what Mac Brown's business acumen is. I know he was a football coach. I know he's a smart guy. I'm not saying that. But you, as an athletic director, not only are you organizing all the athletic events, not only are you organizing all of, you know, the schedules and all those kind of things, you've got to drum up ways to bring in millions and millions of dollars. That's a big business job. I don't know if that's a job for Mac Brown. And lastly, wouldn't he be working with all the people that like got him fired with the boosters and some of the you know big fans and some of the administration? Aren't those the people that fired him from the coaching job? Now maybe Texas goes and they hire Mac Brown and they say the same dumb things that some of these, you know, sports media guys are saying. It doesn't make any sense. Hiring Mac Brown and what he's going to preside over the football program? They brought in Charlie Strong. He's going to preside over the guy that replaced him. Again, sometimes the sports media just, they get these ideas in their heads and they start running with them. And, oh, Mac Brown would be a great AD. I don't have any idea if he would. If I were you, I'd go get a Texas businessman that has some ties to the University of Texas and knows how to make money and knows a little bit about the athletics department. That's who I'd go get. I don't know if Mac Brown's that guy. I think he's, what, in his mid-60s? That's a demanding job. I don't know if that's a job that he would want. It doesn't make any sense. Let's jump into college football a little bit. As we do every week, we talk a little bit about the winners and losers in college football this week. And it's not always the direction that you might think it is. Like you look at some of the games, say, oh, well, they're a different winner. Well, we got to go a little bit deeper than that here on the Daily Dose. Let's talk about a few of the winners. Because one of the winners, you know, this is a guy that was on the hot seat to start the season. But somehow, Miami coach Al Golden has got the Hurricanes winning a few games. What are they, 3-0 now? Okay. I mean, it actually just one meaningful game, but still. Miami beat Nebraska on Saturday in overtime, and they are now 3-0. Yes, the other teams on their schedule were Bethune-Cookman and Florida Atlantic. And I realize that Miami is probably going to get crushed by Florida State in a couple weeks. In fact, they're probably going to get beat by Cincinnati next Thursday. But let's take a moment and cheer for Al Golden while we can, because I don't know if he's going to have much more time down there. I will say this, if they lose to Cincinnati next Thursday night, I don't expect him to have much more time while he's at the University of Miami. But they've started off 3-0 and they beat Nebraska. I don't know how they beat Nebraska. I watched a little bit of that game. I don't know if it made sense. They got off to that good start. Otherwise, they would not have beat them. But hey, Al Golden, you're a winner this week. Let's jump over to another winner. Ole Miss. Ole Miss beat Alabama 43-37 in Tuscaloosa. And I think about this for a little bit. That is now back-to-back seasons that Ole Miss has beat Alabama. I thought they would keep it close. I thought they were going to fall apart. And in the second half, we started to see Bama make that run. I was like, oh, here we go. Here we go. But they came through. They made plays. Yes, their quarterback chucked up a lucky pass on the one play, and they get away with a touchdown. But, hey, Ole Miss found a way, and they have a ton of talent. There is no question about that. Ole Miss has as much talent as anyone in the country. I don't know for sure what they're going to do the rest of the season. But here's something to think about. Right now, Mississippi is averaging 64 points per game, best in the country. And they're only giving up 205 yards per game. I realize they played some bad teams prior to Alabama, but they are number one in offensive efficiency. And what that basically is that is points calculated per play. They are number one. They are number eight in defensive efficiency. Ole Miss is a very, very good football team. Like I said, I don't know what they'll do the rest of the season, but Ole Miss is a very good football team. They're going to be interesting to watch because they do have a tough schedule. Obviously, playing over on that SEC Western side, they're going to have some big games still coming. But the way that they beat Alabama, they're as good as anyone in the country. We kept seeing like Ole Miss getting these recruiting classes, and we're like, okay, but when are these really ever going to pay off? They're starting to pay off now. They're doing some things down at Mississippi. Our last winner, I'm going to give it, I'm going to be honest. It's a little bit charitable. Here in Denver, and I've told you, I've talked a little bit about college football here in Denver. We don't have great college football right now. The best program in the state of Colorado is a military academy, the Air Force Academy. And I'm going to be honest, it's not that close. But on Saturday, we have Colorado versus Colorado State in the Rocky Mountain Showdown. Now, this is two mediocre teams whose glory days are like 20 years behind them. And I watched some of this game. I know it pains me to admit that. I watched some of this game. I'm telling you right now, it was some bad football. It had a ton of mistakes. Two turnovers, 14 penalties, and these teams were missing field goals. Combined, both teams, they went 3 for 8 kicking field goals. I mean, just bring in a kicker and you'd be pretty good. You're kicking at altitude. And these weren't like, well, yeah, but they were kicking 60-yarders. No, like 27-yarders, and they couldn't make them. Just to give you, because I know you probably didn't watch this dreadful game, and more sympathetic, I could not be. I understand why you didn't watch it, but just to give you a quick rundown, like I said, we're in Colorado. Just to give you a quick rundown of how this game went down, the University of Colorado missed a field goal at the end of regulation, and I when I say missed it, I mean he was closer to the pylon than he was to the post. Shanked it. I thought it got blocked, and then when they re-showed it, I was like, no, it didn't get blocked. I don't know if he fell down and like hit it with his knee or what it did, but it was brutal. So the game goes to overtime. On the first play of overtime, Colorado State gets the ball, throw a pass incomplete, but Colorado roughs the passer and gets a 15-yard penalty. You know, you start at what, like the 25 already? So it's not like you're not already, you know, right there. They get the 15-yard penalty. It puts them up to like the 10 or 12 because I think they had to go half the distance. CSU gains no more yardage. You get a personal foul penalty, and you couldn't gain any further yardage. So they kick a 27-yard field goal, and you guessed it. It got blocked. Colorado ended up kicking a field goal to win it. I'm going to be honest, and I'm giving Colorado a winner this week. Kind of feels like you were in like a Dungeons & Dragons championship. You might have won, but you're kind of still a loser. Let's move over to our losers of the week. If you didn't see, and when we talked a little bit last week about Arkansas coach Brett Bielema, Arkansas, I mean, they made our loser list last week when they lost to Toledo, but this week they might have drained a little more water out of that pool. This week, Arkansas loses 35-24 to Texas Tech, as though that wasn't bad enough. After the game, Texas Tech coach Cliff Kingsbury calls out Brett Bielema and says that they were at a Texas high school coaching clinic. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize this. A lot of coaches, they know each other. You go to these clinics. I know when I was still coaching, you went to a number of clinics. We went to clinics with guys we coach against rivals. Some of those rival teams, some of those coaches you actually know. You actually, some of them you're friends with. You see some of the stuff they teach. You teach some of the stuff that they look at. But apparently, at a Texas high school coaching clinic, Brett Bielema basically said that if you play against Arkansas and you run a spread offense and you don't have a fullback, we're going to beat you. We're going to beat you badly. And then Cliff Kingsbury in the press conference after brought that up and then said, oh, well, we just beat you. And I've got news for you. Texas A&M is going to beat you again next week. I don't know. I guess Kingsbury really took offense that Bielema, you know, called out the spread offense and you're throwing it all over the place and they were going to beat you up. Brett Bielema having a rough season with Arkansas. And Arkansas, I know, was on a lot of people's list as maybe a dark horse candidate in that SEC West. That is not happening. Pig Suey is struggling a little bit. Another loser in our weekly losers in college football has to be the state of Alabama. First, Bama loses to Ole Miss. We talked about that a little bit. Ole Miss, just, I mean, they look like they're more talented than Alabama. You're already starting to hear fans down in Alabama talking about, I think Nick Saban's slipping. I think it's getting away from him. You just played for a national championship like 9 months ago. You have no idea how bad it could be. But then Auburn got pounded by LSU. I told you last week that LSU was looking for a little bit of redemption after the beating they took to Auburn the year before. LSU beat Auburn 45-21, and LSU running back Leonard Fournette had 228 yards and 3 touchdowns. He's probably still down in Death Valley, just running up and down that field. State of Alabama had it rough this weekend. I think it's funny. You get some of these states, like Alabama and Mississippi, and they're like, you know, yelling back and forth at each other, like, you know, we're so cultured, and you're so, you know, you're out in the country, and we're so much better than you. And let's be honest, both states, Alabama, I mean Mississippi, we realize huckleberry pies like count as money down there. I don't know if either one of you is necessarily metropolitan, but let's move forward. The last loser for our week, I got to hand it to, and this one, you might not have saw this one coming, but I've got to give our final loser of the week in college football to Southern Cal's head coach, Steve Sarkisian's liver, because Southern Cal got pounded 41-31 by Stanford. And when you look at their schedule, Notre Dame, UCLA, Utah, Oregon, Arizona, all still coming. I've got news for you. Southern Cal, your shot at a title, that might have been it, because you could end up with multiple losses. I can't even fathom the bender that Steve Sarkisian has been on since then. We know, you know, prior to the season, going up in front of the boosters, doing all that stuff, we know he was doing some drinking then. Imagine now that the stress is actually getting to him. Dude is probably just living with his head under a tap on a pillow right now. I kind of want to see if he can pull that back together. There are a number of boosters and fans and administration. They are not Steve Sarkisian fans. Let's just hope that he wakes it up in time for Arizona State on Saturday. A couple games to watch. It's not a great week in college football this week. It's not horrible, but not quite as many marquee matchups to keep an eye on. Number three, TCU goes to Texas Tech, and we'll see if Cliff Kingsbury is going to talk some smack to Gary Patterson. I kind of like it. I'm going to be honest. I kind of like that he's calling out Brett Bielema and just running his mouth a little bit. It makes it more entertaining, doesn't it? Let's see if he does that to Gary Patterson this week. I have a suspicion he won't. One of the biggest games to keep an eye on will be number 9 UCLA going to number 16 Arizona. You know, Arizona quietly putting up some big numbers. You realize Arizona is averaging 54 points per game? And the reason it's quiet is because they've played Texas, San Antonio, and like Nevada and Northern Arizona. Yeah, you haven't played anybody yet, but let's see what Arizona does this week against UCLA. Again, we want to keep an eye on that quarterback, that freshman quarterback, Josh Rosen, for UCLA. What is he going to do when there's pressure? Should be interesting to see that one. The last game to keep an eye on, again, staying out in the pack this week, just how it kind of worked out. Number 18, Utah, goes to number 13, Oregon. You might not realize this. Oregon's defense is awful. And I want to see if Oregon's defense can step up, because do you realize, and they only play, I mean, they played Michigan State. Other than that, they really haven't played any real tough teams. They're giving up 34 points per game. Keep an eye on Oregon. See if they can, you know, Utah might not put up huge numbers, but they're going to be efficient and they're going to be tough, as we do every single week. We have got to jump over to our Daily Dose top five. And, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about Tony Romo going out and what that injury could do to the Dallas Cowboys. Because I know Dallas Cowboys are sitting there at 2-0. They've beaten two divisional teams. You know, they beat the Giants. They beat the Eagles. You're sitting in a pretty good spot, but you just lost your quarterback. That's a big loss. And it could be impactful. And I want to talk about five of the worst quarterback injuries that were impactful for their teams. Sometimes it really, really hurts to lose that guy. Daily Dose top five worst quarterback injuries and how impactful they were to their teams. Number five, in 2004, There was a young quarterback that came into the league from Central Florida, and it was starting to look like he was going to be great. In 2004, Dante Culpepper had 39 touchdowns to just 11 interceptions. And everyone was starting to look at him and say, hey, it might be coming. I mean, he might be taking Minnesota, to the playoffs, having them in contention. It was starting to look like Dante Culpepper was kind of getting it going. And in Game 7 of 2005, Dante Culpepper had a horrific knee injury. Tore three ligaments in his knee. Tore the ACL, the MCL, and the PCL. And Dante Culpepper was never the same after that. The Vikings fell off. They never could quite get that back. It took them a few years to get back to the playoffs. But, 2004, Dante Culpepper, he looked like he was the next big, big thing. Number four on our list, impactful quarterback injuries. Joe Namath. We all remember that the Jets won, or maybe not remember, but you've probably heard in the history books at least, the Jets won the Super Bowl III in 68. In 69, the Jets made it back to the playoffs and they lost to the Chiefs. But here's what you might not know. And the Chiefs went on to Super Bowl IV. But in 1970, Joe Namath broke his wrist in Game 5. In 71, he blew out his knee in the preseason. The Jets actually ended up going like 10-18 over those seasons, and Joe Namath was never the same quarterback that he had been. It's a good thing they won that in Super Bowl III because they never got back there. They never got it really that close, and Namath just suffered from health issues from there on with the knee and the wrist. Number three, this is one that I really remember. Number three, one of the most dynamic players ever to play in the NFL game. If you don't believe me, go YouTube this guy. Because in 1993, the Philadelphia Eagles looked like they might have a shot to be one of the big dogs. They had one of the most exciting players ever to play in Randall Cunningham, and they were loaded on defense. They had Clyde Simmons, they had Seth Joyner, safety Andre Waters, they had cornerback Eric Allen. The Eagles were 4-0, and Randall Cunningham had won Offensive Player of the Month. He had five touchdowns thrown already through the first three games. It looked like the Eagles might be the team in 93. He ended up blowing out his or breaking his left fibula in Game 4 versus the New York Jets. And from there on, Philadelphia went 4-8, finished 8-8. And that was kind of the end of that Eagles run. They had some chances for a while. They had the very good defense. They couldn't get offense. They got Cunningham. They got very good on offense. They couldn't get the defense. And then he got hurt. And it just kind of ended that little run for Philadelphia. They were one of those great teams that never quite got as far as maybe they should have with all that talent. Randall Cunningham, one of the most exciting players, was never quite the same after he broke his leg that year. Number two on our list. And this one, it didn't kill their season completely, but they didn't make the playoffs. If you look back at the numbers, you say, well, they still went 10-6. But in 1985, you might remember when the Washington Redskins were playing the New York Giants at home on Monday Night Football. And Joe Theismann, they were at least in playoff contention. Joe Theismann, Lawrence Taylor went in and broke his leg for him. I don't mean just broke it. I mean, that's probably the worst, memorable injury that a lot of people can still recall when Joe Theismann had his leg broken, broke the tibia and the fibula. And here's the thing, like I said, the Redskins went 10-6 with Jay Schrader taking over. They didn't make the playoffs. It ended Joe Theismann's career. He never played football again. Very, very impactful injury to another quarterback. And number one on our list of impactful quarterback injuries, in 1999, the San Francisco 49ers had some pretty big hopes. They had gone 12-4 in 98. They had gone 13-3 in 97. They had gone 12-4 in 96. It kind of felt like the Niners were building towards something special. Maybe this was going to be the year that they get back to the Super Bowl. But in week three, the 49ers face the Arizona Cardinals, and on a blitz, cornerback Aeneas Williams just laid out quarterback Steve Young. It was his seventh concussion, and it ended Steve Young's career. Didn't ever play again. The Niners ended up going 4-12 that season. And that was kind of the end of that little run that they had with Steve Young. I believe Jeff Garcia ended up coming in and taking over like 2 or 3 years later. But that kind of crushed the season for the San Francisco 49ers. I would hope that's not the way this season goes for the Cowboys, but when you lose that signal caller, you lose that leader, and we know Tony Romo can be kind of goofy at the end of games, but Tony Romo's pretty good. The Cowboys losing him, you just never know how it's going to affect the Dallas Cowboys this year. Hey, next week, we will be recapping the NFL. Of course, we'll be recapping college football and all that goes on there. Going to start to preview some of the Major League playoff races, start to take a look at some of those matchups and how they are shaping up. And you might not realize this. Did you realize the NHL is getting back on the ice? The NBA is getting back in the gym? Yes, it's just preseason stuff, but those things are coming. It is starting to come full circle, and we're coming around to that time of year again. Those seasons are so long. We won't talk much about that, but some know that some of those things are coming, and as we always do, we will have our Daily Dose Top 5. Hey, if you get a chance, head on over to iTunes, give us a 5-star rating, give us just a quick review. Doesn't have to be anything big, but we would appreciate that so much. It just gets us seen by a few more people. If you haven't, go tell a friend, tell a family member, tell a coworker. Let's try to get as many listeners to the Daily Dose as we possibly can. I would like to thank you all for listening. I really do appreciate it. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do this show each and every week without you and all that you do. I appreciate it. Hey, hope you all have a great week. I will see you all next week.
There's no easy way to say what we're about to say.
We believe your wife is a German spy.
This year, the truth will be discovered.
I know for a fact you'll be proven wrong.
Allied, starring Brad Pitt and Marion Cotillard. Allied, in cinemas November 25th, rated TBC.
Hey, what happened to my kiss?